Okay, so you're rolling?
I'm rolling, and so far, so good.
Okay, great, me too. All right, so hello and good morning.
Good really morning in Berlin. It's 9:30 in Berlin right now.
9:30, that's right, yeah. How would you, like, so Ana Maria Alvarez Monge?
Monge. But in Germany, I go for Ana Alvarez. You know, especially for letters, they get confused with two last names.
Yeah?
Yes. You have no idea how many letters have been missing or bank cards. No. So Ana Alvarez. In Germany, I just go by Ana Alvarez.
You know, one of my best friends comes from Malaga in Spain, and she has this great name that she usually just goes by Vivi for short, but the full name is Violeta de Rio del Castillo. And it's such a nice long name.
No chance here.
No, it would not work in Germany.
Beautiful name.
Hi. Thank you for finding time to be here.
Of course.
I just wanted to maybe kind of pick your brain a little bit, get to know you a little more. You know, this show is occasionally quite silly program, but the concept just being that sometimes I talk to people who moved to different countries and work in different creative fields. And for those who listened to the show before, I've talked about our arrangement where, you know, you guys reached out to me and I did an Instagram reel promoting Migrapreneur. We're going to get into all of that, everything your nonprofit does. But I want to know a little bit about your backstory and, you know, can you maybe say a bit about, you know, where you come from and start, you know, where you want?
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Woof. Okay. So I'm originally from Costa Rica, a beautiful paradise, I have to say. It's a very dangerous paradise as the rest of Latin America. I'm not going to get there. But in 2015, I moved to Germany. My partner back then got a job in Berlin. And I have to say that I left a really promising career back home. My background is in communications. My specialization is in human rights. So I was already working in this field for the last 13 years before jumping to Germany. And I was already working in an international organization. So moving to Germany was quite that moment of realization that, you know, I'm still young, let's make the jump. What I was not expecting was because of my background and my preparation and experience and studies, I was not prepared to what I faced when I arrived in Germany in 2015. So I think back then it was very specific. It was a very specific moment. So it was a moment when Germany was welcoming mostly the asylum seekers coming from Syria.
Right.
And because of my previous experience, you know, I used to live in surrounded by 130 nationalities back in the organization I was working. So I think to me it was not a brainer, so to say, what to do, because for me, Syrians were people that I already knew. I was familiar with the culture. We can talk to eye level. To me, it was not this kind of, oh my God, let's help the poor refugees. No. So I think it was a different setting, how Syria was before the war and how highly talented were these people. So then, in that moment of feeling lonely, depressed, of not finding my way in Berlin, not finding jobs, the German classes were absolutely boring and terrible. And And I remember feeling, oh my God, I'm never going to make it, you know? And so then I went to this meetup full of, I don't know, young European people coming together to find ways how to welcome, mostly when they came all together at once at some point, because they were already coming anyways to Germany in the previous 2 years, but especially they were in a very specific moment. So new ideas and solutions came to the table. And what I was not surprised, neither prepared, is that right there in that meetup, in that place, I founded my first nonprofit organization. And so by accident, that's always how I explain it, I became a so-called social entrepreneur.
Social trumpeter.
I wish, or he wish, no, social entrepreneur.
Oh,
so
sorry. That makes more sense. That makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
I'm a Latina. He wished to be a trumpeter. No. My first organization was really successful, not just only within Germany, but across Europe. And it put me to travel. And long story short, that's what I do ever since. And now I have another organization. We can talk about that later. But yeah, so then I became a social entrepreneur by accident and a reference in the field of migration, not just only here in Germany and Europe, but also abroad.
It's really such an amazing the amount of work and effort and time you've put into achieving that. And you said you worked in a humanitarian field for 13 years before you even went to Germany. So was that something, like, I guess even as a kid, something you always hoped you would do, or how did you get interested in that?
Yeah, well, I also work in the dark side. I used to work in the government in my country as well, in the Ministry of Finance, dealing with taxes and all that stuff. No, so I think,
oh, wow.
You know, my first career was journalism, because for many of us who studied first journalism, we kind of want to change the world, right? And so you go to, you go out and then you start getting your jobs and you know that... you know, to be a really good journalist nowadays, you have to really, really, really sacrifice a lot and probably do it in an independent way. Because most journalists, you know, we tend to, I mean, there's no other way to work for these big corporates, which is probably owned by people, which, you know, they have their own interests and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think that by doing that and working in agencies in, you know, the most hectic environment ever, I was really good at crisis management, and I used to solve a couple of crises back then in the place where I used to work. And
what would dictate like a crisis in that field?
From people dying, firing more than 1,000 people at once, or closing a company and then try to make it look like it's not a bad thing.
Real crises.
Taking care or try to minimize that goes to media that a big ship full of drugs and money came and belonged to somebody which is well known. This kind of things that,
wow,
yeah.
Okay, like straight up Michael Clayton espionage, you know,
no,
crimes.
No, and it's Latin America. I mean, I don't know what else to say. But what is really important about this is that although I was really good at that, very good, I was not happy.
Right.
Because initially I jumped into communication and journalism, not because I had always this very entrepreneurial spirit and very like crisis-minded management, you know,
yeah.
But I didn't know as an entrepreneur and so on. So I think that the fact that I chose journalism back then is because I wanted to do something. And also I come from a very, let's say, background where my parents didn't go to university. My father didn't even go to high school.
This is what I wanted to get into as well, was, you know, did your family encourage you to
yes.
do these things, or was it like a rebellion against something they did to go, you know, sometimes people go into a career, like some people say, I want to be an actor because both parents go into engineering,
no.
And it's like this subconscious separation.
No, it's because I lived that background, you know, especially me as a woman. I come from a very conservative family, very religious family, where, you know, as a kid, I had to arrive at 10 or 11 p.m. I was not allowed to go out parties. It was very restrictive, very chauvinist, and for me to break through and to really go to university, to work, become independent was not that easy, you know. And it was something that still, where the background I come from, was an illusion, delusional, I would say, especially now living in Germany and do what the work that I do. Mm-hmm. From the background that I come from, probably what is expected from me is just to, if I'm lucky, go to the university, and the university meet my husband, and then have children, and then quit all my career, and then dedicate to be home, which there's nothing wrong about that. The problem is that the background where I come from is that this is success for women. You know, women are not expected to have a career and be my age, not even planning to have kids, you know. So these type of personalities, it's not something that is expected in the background that I come from.
Sure.
So, yeah. And I was always very engaged about that, especially social justice, essentially, because women like myself, you know, were fighting for this. And I remember a long time ago, I was perhaps 19 years old or 20 years old. I used to volunteer, you know, like with a group of women. And somebody asked me, like, Anna, do you think you can help some women, you know, to how to use the computer and so on? And I remember that moment of realization came to my head that in my same town, I made the question to some of these women. And I said, and I asked, you know, what's your experience with GoPro? Just tell me, what do you know? Which, I mean, do you have back then? You know, you have Yahoo, or you have Hotmail, you know, you know, and one of them raised the hand and said, my experience with computer is I clean it every day in the house I work.
Wow.
And in that moment, you know, it's like when you go to university and you come like back to your town, it's like you feel super progressive. And then that moment of realization makes you understand that they have less than nothing. And I think that kept me motivated to, especially to, you know, to fight for social justice, because the world is really, there's a very few group of people who are very privileged. And I think that in the university I went to, I mean, when you go there, of course, there is a group of people who are studying, probably coming from very top-notch high schools. And then you see a world that is very privileged, but when you go back to the place where you come from, at least in my case, you understand that that especially in Latin America, you either are super privileged or not at all. You realize that there are people, and there are many of them, who you couldn't expect nothing. You can't expect them to behave in society, to integrate in society. Mm-hmm. Because their problems are really beyond our understanding. And so, yeah, so of course I had to continue working in the dark side. Not just only I was good at it, very early age, I was already earning good money and living by myself and sustaining myself and having a pretty good life. But I was not happy, and that's where I decided to go through a specialization, a master's in human rights, essentially, because that was my call since a long time ago. And then I switched to nonprofits and humanitarian, and mostly working with, I was working with an amazing organization living in a campus with 130 nationalities, where kids, teenagers from all over the world. The organization, NY, is called United Work College. It exists already for more than 60, 70 years old. As in 70 years ago, and people don't know that exists, but very, very promising leaders across the world have studied there. There's a reason for that. The reason why they're super good leaders in what they do, it's because you live in a campus with 130 nationalities. You don't get to change your rooms. Even if you are super rich, you're probably the prince, which there have been princes in that boarding school, and the refugee from Western Sahara at the same time, or somebody coming from Palestine, another one from Israel, the rich guy from Norway who came to the organization to see poverty probably, and dealing with people coming from Cameroon, Congo, and so on. And what it was interesting back then was to see and witness, and not just only witness, but also guide these students to be and look at each other as equals, study together, no chance of changing rooms unless the conflict is very heavy, but to teach them and learn how to solve differences in between, because the main goal is to learn how to live together. And so I was living in the perfect world. So I have seen it as an experiment, how humanity should live and should work. And how is to give the same chances and opportunities to everybody, and then you just let them thrive. I remember before coming to Germany, one of the students, he came from Western Sahara. I remember when he arrived, he Western Sahara, especially the refugee camp there, is just a permanent refugee camp. He was born in a refugee camp. He was brought to be a student. He was really good at math. Long story short, I remember that we had to find ways to work on his teeth because he, you know, like he was living in the desert, probably not having clean water and stuff. And 3 years later, he got with pretty good grades, beating the Germans, beating the Norwegians into Brown University, you know, Brown,
sure.
With a full scholarship.
That's amazing. Wow.
You know, so that's where I'm telling you, like where I come from, working experience, I've seen how the world should look like.
Yeah. And that keeps you going. Right, in a sense.
That keeps me going. And the fun thing is that these people are friends and they will fight for each other forever. Mm-hmm. And when I came here to Germany and I started to see the switch of such a big welcoming to the Syrians and in a time frame within 1 year and a half, seeing the pop-up of AfD and all the right wing, not just here, but Brexit happened, right. Trump happened.
Right. That's something I want to get into as well. Like, you know, as a brown woman moving to a foreign country, right as the cusp of the American politics shifting so very much to the right. I mean, there's so many things I want to dive into, even just from that perspective. Like, you know, you said you were with your partner at the time and the decision was basically that you had this opportunity to go to Germany to stay in that relationship. And I'm guessing, when you got to Germany, you know, did that relationship, I don't want to
changed.
Pry too much. It didn't last, right? The relationship. Because what's interesting for me is the idea of you going somewhere new.
It did last, but it transformed into a family attachment. Also because I changed. And so he's German and... And he had to suffer through me.
Germans love suffering.
Especially if you get with a Latina, no, I'm kidding. Drama is real. No, but I changed because, and I think we both evolve and we both change. We are friends, family,
That's great.
Everything, you know, because he was living in Costa Rica at the time I met him. And he saw the difference in the transition of how I was treated the other way around. Mm-hmm. And my desperation at some point of feeling depressed, feeling rejected, feeling that he saw what I was doing back home, you know, he saw how important I was. I was already in managerial level and... And living here thinking, you know, I started my first organization with basically the money that he was giving me every day to survive.
Wow.
And for me, helping women back home to be independent and be now a dependent one at the age of, you know, so it's, I mean, what I want people to understand is that my story is not unique. There are so many women, and that's basically what I work now today, and I keep doing that, especially Latinas. You know, if you're a Latina, you probably made it to Germany. You probably already break through your ceiling back home, which is really hard to break through anyways as a woman and become independent and be a professional and so on. And then you come here and you're treated like a baby. You don't have the skill sets to be taken into account in society, either work-wise and all stuff.
Yeah.
So... I oftentimes see a lot of women, migrant women, depressed because of that same feeling of coming here and feel that you have to break the ceiling again. And this one seems sometimes impossible to break through.
The one in Germany.
The one in Germany, yeah.
Why do you
feel
like
it's... Because you're a migrant and you're a woman.
Yeah.
It's a combination of two very powerful things that... As a migrant, men or women or however you identify yourself with, but especially men and women, you know, being a migrant in general, it's already tough. But if you already put yourself in a gender or no gender that you're trying to fight through, I mean, you know, discrimination is intersectional. So if you're a woman, if you're a migrant, you probably have less opportunities. If you're Black and a migrant and a woman, you are in the really bottom on the ladder. And the statistics shows that, you know, it's scary, you know, like, you know, that in the Middle East, which we all have this mindset that, oh, everything is oppressed and so on, more women, there are more female founders that are receiving investment for their work. But in Europe, in the last year, actually in Germany, from 1% of the total investment went to female founders, from the previous year of 2021 to 2022, it moved to 0.5% of the whole investment happening in the ecosystem of female founders, for example. And that tells you how much women have to break through, like have to really like go against the odds to really make something happen. And I'm just talking about founders, just to give you, because there's a very clear statistic and that gives you a picture of society. Mm-hmm. In a world that aren't we supporting female founders, so it's very contradictive. And I found Europe, especially Germany, very conservative in many ways. More things that I ever expected before coming to Germany.
Can you maybe list some specifics as to mm-hmm. what conservative things you didn't expect but you were mm-hmm. faced with?
Coming from the so-called third world, coming to Germany and seeing that everything is paper and everything has, the decision still depends on the person behind the desk. Yeah. That although there are structures and although there are systems in place to avoid corruption, and so on, still things are very lengthy and decisions are taking or dependent on the bias of the person behind the desk. Digitalization, I mean, the fact that you make a deposit on a bank and then probably depending on the bank, but most of the time local banks, you make a deposit and you see the deposit 24 hours later, 90 seconds like back home. That's a very conservative decision because it's related to banks and how banks earn money with the time they juggle with the money in the meantime of being transferred.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
Another part is women in leadership position and women enterprising. It's way less than what I was expecting. Also, because when I came here, Angela Merkel was still in power and you always had this perception of Germany, like, oh my God, already has a women leader and has led for so many years. And so you think that this is a country where, you know, like women have a chance to start. And it does, you know, but when you start counting in the statistics, how many women are in the forefront in the government, how many females are in the forefront of companies, did you know that there are more CEOs call named Peter or Thomas than female CEOs?
That's insane.
In Germany. So it's scary. And that doesn't mean that here I don't have as a woman the freedom I didn't have back home, you know, like the fact that here in Berlin I managed to walk and arrive to my apartment at 4 a.m. in the morning and arriving alive and nobody, you know, following you or trying to steal your stuff.
Right, like physical safety.
That's something, you know, the safety, it's amazing.
Munich is really safe.
But there are so many things that we expect Europe to be, especially Germany, to be more progressive. And there are some areas like these ones that I just mentioned that it's not. So, things can be changed. That's the funny thing. You know, I now have the leverage and the voice to be asked by even politicians. Sometimes they come to me and actually I had two weeks ago and he asked me like, Anna, which laws we need to change in Germany? And I said, you know what? There's many laws that should not be changed, especially the new one about the dual citizenship. I mean, the dual citizenship should be allowed anyways. But the fact that you are now going to be challenge from moving to B1 level to C1 level, that's something that shouldn't change, you know, like how many citizens have which already have the German citizenship have contributed so much to this country in terms of taxes and so on, and they were able to request for citizenship because of the level of German, because they're working, they don't have time to go to classes. So my answer to him was, there are so many laws that should not be changed. But if there's something that we need to all work together and change, is a mindset. And that mindset has, and if we're going to change, which is hard because if you're going to make a real change in society, you need to do it from a progressive side. You don't change things with a conservative mindset. You don't, historically speaking.
Right.
And so if there's no progressiveness and open and really open-mindedness on really changing a system, probably the changes are going to create a bit of harm to some group of population, in the population. Yeah.
And, you know, when you were basically dreaming up this nonprofit, and how did you decide, or when you were living in Berlin originally, you know, why did you decide that that was the best city to stick with as opposed to trying a different city with a different state, you know, for example? How did you know Berlin was the best place to do it?
Because back then it was cheaper. Mm. And for enterprising and for innovating, I also have a for-profit and I also run other nonprofits as well now. But for enterprising, you need to have a setting that is inclusive. And a setting that is inclusive is not just only minded by diversity around you, not nationalities, but all kinds of people around you. Transportation and movement has to be more, it has to be there, but also the affordability of starting from scratch and really build something without nothing in your pockets or mostly nothing and only your basic things covered, which sometimes is very tough, meaning at least having the place where you live, a roof, heating and everything sorted out, then you are ready for innovation and create new things. If you don't have the basics, you probably need to go and find a job and forget about becoming an entrepreneur, you know? And so that's what happened in Silicon Valley. That's why Silicon Valley was a boom back in the days, but now it's impossible. It's only served and reserved for very few people who have money to build companies and build startups because it's incredibly expensive. So the more a city becomes expensive, the more difficult it will be for anyone to break through. And so Berlin was that place back then. Berlin's turning a little bit expensive now.
Oh yeah.
I'm concerned, and actually, for me, it's not a surprise why, in Germany, from the creation of 400,000 companies a year, went down to 60,000, which is a huge downgrade.
Wow.
It's correlated undeniably with the economical situation after the Ukraine war.
Sure. Yeah. I have a couple of friends who, one's German and one's Brazilian, and they lived in Lisbon for some years, and now they're moving back to Germany. They used to live in Munich, but now they're moving to Berlin, and I had a lunch yesterday with one of them, and they were saying how it's so impossible, so overwhelmingly impossible to find a place to live, that they've submitted on these apps, you know, he said he submitted probably around 300 applications just to see a place, and probably about 10 wow. got back. And
the funny thing is that 3 years ago, Lisbon was the place. I remember that even in the startup ecosystem here in Berlin, everybody, oh, we should move to Lisbon. It's thriving and you should consider da, 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 da. Mm. And now because of that hype, it's the result.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, let's say that you could, from an authority point of view, you could capitalize on that. You could do a lot of efforts to keep a city which is still affordable. And so, yes, in this matter, it goes back to authorities and what they allow to. Up until recent, Berlin was this place where, you know, you could even fight for a cap for rental races, you know, and now not anymore, you know, like only in Berlin, only in Kreuzberg, an entire building that was renovated by Google, only it happens in Berlin that they were kicked out by the neighbors because they didn't want Google there because they were afraid of whatever happened. It only happens in Berlin. It only happens in Berlin. Probably if that would happen today, I don't think that would work through, that would work. But back then, Berlin was, I still want to believe that Berlin is a place. But back then, you could see these magical things happening.
And how was it overcoming the language for you? I imagine, I think in our first meeting, if I remember, you said you were fluent now, but I wonder how long that took, or how confident do you feel in that? Because that's a journey I continue to struggle with.
No. I still continue. I'm still in classes. I do a major effort. I have a private professor, and actually yesterday night I arrived from Köln from traveling, and then at 10 p.m. I was hitting my German classes. I mean, it's an effort, you know, and you know this very better than as well as I do. But all of us foreigners know how much of an effort we have to put to really go to a different level. I'm fluent, but I'm still not confident. I speak a lot. I'm always invited as a speaker here and there. Even in German countries, which I'm always surprised why they keep inviting me, despite of, you know. And I'm always being very open and honest. I said, you know, like, I'm very fluent, but I still don't feel the confidence of addressing a big audience in German.
Sure. I mean, that's a big step.
Right. I'm still not there yet. That's why I'm getting ready and preparing, and I have this private, you know, but that's something I can afford now. I was not able to afford when I arrived and I started. So I think for me it was mostly people in the street, other migrants, who you could understand, who you can speak in the same level, who you're not afraid of committing mistakes. And that safe space allowed me to just speak in any way. Still in front of locals or Germans, I'm afraid, also because I've seen a couple of things and I've witnessed a couple of moments where they get very hostile if you don't speak really perfect German.
Really? Hostile?
Yes. I mean, it's when I mean hostile, because it really shapes your trauma with German language. But I've seen things that are really rooted in this proudness of the language as an identity. And I remember once we had a project with a very large retail private company. I'm not going to mention the name. And the person that we hand over the report to about the work that we did in partnership, which was a very beautiful project. I remember we handed over the report, and I decided to hand over the report in German. It was not expected. I just decided to do it in German because they should have it in German, because they should share the results and the accomplishments with the rest within the HR departments. Because what we learned about putting foreigners and locals together and working together in the same level was just magical. And so, of course, I did the report. I asked a person who was working within my team, and she's German. She was born here. She was doing a PhD already in politics here and so on. So I asked her to help me to write a report. We submitted the report, and I remember receiving back an email, very horrible email, saying, "Anna, would you mind not being more professional and not using Google Translator for building reports?" And I'm like,
whoa.
What? So they immediately thought that I built a report.
That's really, and such a rude thing and, to ask as well.
Yes.
I mean, to say
and
at
in
all.
A very upfront, yes. And I went through it, and I said, like, there's some mistakes. And I talked to my colleague back then and said, like, you know, message came through, and I just wanted to ask you perhaps if we can just go through the report, maybe, I don't know, maybe some typos or something, I don't know what happened, because I mean, I was interested, of course, I mean, I needed to submit it back without errors. And she started to cry, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, this has been my struggle my entire life." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, like, "You know, my parents are Turkish." And I'm like, "Yes." And I don't know how Germans always notice that I'm not one of them. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean, like, you're not one of them? You were born here. And I remember back then I had the report to my partner, and I said, "Can you go through this report and tell me?" And he said, like, "It looks like it was not written by a German." And like, okay,
oh, wow.
I'm lost here. How come you, like, can you explain me how you noticed that?
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I understood, because I don't see these filters, you know, like for me, somebody who was born here is German.
Yes.
Period. You know, and you were born in the language, you're native in that language. And so when you witness these little things, and then I started, I remember we did a workshop after that. I teamed up with the British consul and we did a workshop about language. And we invited people from around the world, like different cultures, and we talk about like the taboo topic of a language. And yeah, we find out, and we found out scary information. I mean, first and foremost, we should be open enough to speak in different accents in different ways. If I commit a mistake, that's totally fine. Language is there for us to communicate, send our message across, and so on. And the moment we start mm-hmm. to be picky, like, we are living in a globalized world. It's not my fault, guys. I come from the third world. I'm a result of it. You know, we should be more open about this. But what we found out is that there are people with the so-called second or third generation, which were never identified as natives, because there's something about the beautiful experiment of multiculturalism and bilingualism since the day you are born that makes you write and express yourself in a different way, which is beautiful, and we should be celebrating this. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's been perceived as a non-native.
Man. That's just...
And, yeah. Right, and that, me, on the other hand, on the other side of the spectrum, makes me fucking scary to speak the language.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And I thought I was scared. I mean, that's a whole different level there.
So, I'm working on it because, yeah. I want to fight more, and I'm always invited on TV in English and Spanish, but I want to do it in German. And I lost that fear.
You strike me as the type that is not going to give up. Absolutely not at all.
I'm not going to give up. And no. I don't
the
know.
The Germans will have to change their language before Ana Alvarez stops trying. I just want to quickly, just because I don't want to take up too much more of your morning here, I just want to ask, can you just give us a little bit of your, from your heart, a little intro to what Migrapreneur is and what it means to you, and if you want to tag or promote anything about any upcoming scholarships or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Migrapreneur, first and foremost, is a purpose-driven company. What that means is, it's a combination between a for-profit and a non-profit organization. What we do initially, what drives us with Migrapreneur, is assist people on the move. How do we do that? We essentially provide systematic support on how to create technology in a more inclusive way toward migrants. And through our non-profit organization, we keep promoting tech education and free education, pro bono support, on what we're experts about, which is bureaucracy. So if you are a migrant entrepreneur, you joined the community, you will probably will be welcomed by a community of peer migrant entrepreneurs who we have helped navigate the German bureaucracy when it comes to building a company. And essentially from setting up a business to... We have supported migrant entrepreneurs from the very beginning until sometimes, unfortunately, bankruptcies. We are not lawyers, but we do have a network of lawyers and tax advisors who we are, from the for-profit side, preparing to welcome more, because they have to go through an entire process of understanding how is to work with migrants, be more patient, getting rid of biases, and we are doing that through technology. And we are soon to launch there's a software already, but we're soon to launch a platform which is going to be available for everybody in Germany. But essentially, our goal is what we already do in the backstage, which is how to navigate the German bureaucracy in a more digitalized ways, and how to connect with the experts that are going to make me feel more safe, and to ask questions and to set up my companies without being ripped off or you know, not running into mistakes. And through the nonprofit, is our gift and our contribution to people like us. And when I mention it's us, it's me and my co-founder, Munzer. He's from Syria. It's our contribution to give back to people who are still trying to find their way, like us back then in 2015, in from different backgrounds and comings. And we keep offering educational opportunities. Right now we have one course called Working Tech, which we essentially give the opportunity for those who are still underemployed. And underemployed means people who are still doing mini jobs, or they are struggling to find a job in the career that they initially studied. And they would like to see in tech as an opportunity to switch, but not that much of a switch, but it's more complementary. So that's why the courses were designed and were selected on purpose to be complementary to some of the existing careers that we know migrants hold, but they are not able to pursue in Germany. And on top of that, they get mentors, which are members of the community of the migrantpreneur community, migrant entrepreneurs who are already in a different level in life. They are already hiring people. They already, you know, like they are software developers or UX designers, experts with a lot of years in the career. So the idea is that mentors are also migrants themselves who already landed in top-notch jobs or already running scalable startups, who are also able and want to give back to fellow migrants who are starting and initiating. And because our network right now is quite large, we are setting up a group of partners from private companies to public organizations to essentially support these migrants to find really their way in after the courses, not just by supporting them with the German language, but also with upcoming job fairs for them to apply what they learned, and an entire and very ambitious career development process, which allows them to understand how to improve their LinkedIn presence, how to improve their CVs and get ready for interviews, and so on and so forth.
That sounds amazing. I'm so glad that you know, we had a chance to learn a bit about your past and how you got to Germany, and you know, what your passions are, and it's really inspirational. I'm really thankful for all your time today and for being so open.
And to you, Jordan, for giving us the space, because we don't want to grow like this, you know, just as another entrepreneur doing our business and so on. We want to benefit people, because we are migrants. We've been there. We struggle. We know each other. If we just say one word, we know what that means. And there's a lot of work to do. And I'm glad to be working with other fellow migrants like yourself as well, and many other people that we can contribute with it between each other. Because, hey, if we don't do it, who else is going to do it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll put the website link in the show notes. So if you're listening now, you can just scroll down to the show notes, check out the link, and check out Migrantpreneur's website, and check out Anna. And yeah, I guess we can say bye, and then I'll just chat with you a bit after we stop the recording. But thank you, everybody, for listening, and go check out Migrantpreneur.
Thank you.
And bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Look out, baby. The saints are coming.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.